I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Ivan Henry case has been making news in recent days as the Supreme Court of Canada heard arguments in a case where Mr. Henry's lawyers argued his charter rights were violated during a trial more than 30 years ago that resulted in his spending 27 years in prison. In 1982, Ivan Henry had been detained by the Vancouver police, accused of being the rip-off rapist. He was charged, tried, and found guilty of 10 charges of sexual assault. He defended himself in court and claimed there was a conspiracy against him. Throughout his nearly 30 years in prison, he maintained his innocence. And in 2010, after a review by a special prosecutor, he was acquitted and released from prison. However, he's still trying to clear his name as he's been fighting for compensation. Joan McEwen has recently published a book, Innocence on Trial, The Framing of Ivan Henry. It's a compelling book, meticulously researched, offering an overview of how the investigation into these sexual assaults was bungled and how the criminal justice system failed Ivan Henry. Joan McEwen is a lawyer and arbitrator in Vancouver and has spent much time helping those who've been wrongfully convicted in their effort to be exonerated and compensated. I'll get her to talk about Ivan Henry, the trials ahead, and this case that's taken much from Ivan Henry, his family, not to mention those who were victimized 32 years ago. The website for more is at joanmcewen.com. The book is published by Heritage House. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Joan McEwen. Ms. McEwen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So what struck me in reading this book, I was born in 1982, was seeing what Vancouver was like 32 years ago. I mean, it at once, it's very different than it is today, but at another, it's awfully familiar. And where all this happened, where all these assaults happened, where Ivan lived at the time. I mean, I live at Fraser in 23rd, so it's not terribly far from
right.
Mount Pleasant. That's the thing that as I started the book, I got out of it. And it's a Vancouver, as I said, that's familiar but different at the same time, isn't it?
Interesting you would say that. I guess I'm a little older than you, but I actually had clerked for the judge who, the trial judge in the Ivan Henry case, so I was well into my legal career at that point. And so it had a different kind of resonance for me. I actually was reading about lawyers that I knew well and, mm-hmm. and in the transcripts and so on. So it made it even more interesting, I think.
Yeah, and so just tell us what was happening in Vancouver at the time. I guess the Clifford Olson thing, was that was just before all of this?
Yeah,
right?
it was just the Clifford Olson thing was just wrapping up. And, of course, it was a jurisdictional dispute was one of the problems, similar very much to the Willie Picton case, where the VPD, the Vancouver Police Department, were arguing with the RCMP over who had jurisdiction. And it was also bungled in terms of Clifford Olson, as you may recall, because Clifford Olson was brought back into jail, I think, three or four different times, rearrested. Each time he was let go, he killed another child. So there was a lot of embarrassment on the side of the police. However, I don't think that fully... So some people hypothesize that the police were in a hurry to catch someone. Mm-hmm. They had tunnel vision. They set their sight on Ivan because he had an attempted rape conviction in Winnipeg, and they were blinkered. I don't believe that to be true. I go further in the book and say they knew he was innocent. Mm-hmm. So that's not tunnel vision. That's actually going after someone knowing that he's innocent, which is probably the biggest scandal you can think of. I also say in the book, we now know, I posit now who the real rapist was and name him, and for some reason, he got a free pass from the police, and that is one of the great mysteries of this book. The case is why did Donald McRae get a free pass? He was a suspect in the Ivan Henry crimes. Mm-hmm. When Ivan went to jail, he went on to rape 25 at least other people, likely more, and yet the police sort of sat on that and did nothing about it. And he was, you know, he was a career criminal. He had offenses since he was 18 years old, Peeping Tom, trespass by night. So there are many mysteries left, of course. I guess there always are in stories like this, but I'd sure like that one answered.
And so even in the beginning of the book, when he's arrested and Ivan has a lawyer, Mr. White, at the beginning of all of this, he claims that there's this conspiracy against him. How much of that do you buy?
Well, I actually buy it because I don't buy that there was a, certainly don't think the judges were in on it.
Or Richard Peck.
Oh, no, not at all. But I think what where Ivan got this conspiracy notion from is very understandable. For one thing, when that ridiculous lineup photo was introduced, which showed him in a chokehold, any judge in their right mind and any lawyer in his or her right mind would have jettisoned that preliminary hearing. I mean, right away, you've got 17, originally you had, I think, 15 complainants at the preliminary hearing, 11 of whom had attended that ridiculous lineup, and so their identification evidence was irretrievably flawed, which it took the Court of Appeal till 2010 to say, but any judge should have brought that to an immediate halt. So I've been sitting there thinking, why is my lawyer not screaming blue murder about this this identification photo? And so by the end of the trial, he'd lost all faith in legal representation. So when Rick Peck came to see him, Richard Peck, who's a very esteemed criminal lawyer, first of all, Ivan didn't know him from a hole in the ground, didn't know his reputation. To him, he was just another lawyer that was probably going to be in bed with the prosecutor. So he opted to represent himself. What the trial judge should have done, of course, is represent is appoint an amicus curiae, a friend of the court, who is appointed independently of the accused, but is there to represent his interests, to make sure that the arguments are made in his favor, objections are taken when they're appropriate, and so on. So I totally understand why Ivan elected to represent himself.
Does he regret that today?
I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, I think he still feels like the system is out to get him. I don't think he's ever really felt that the criminal, the lawyers, the judges, anyone really has his back.
And after 27 years in prison, I don't think you gain any more confidence, I don't think, right?
No, and also the way he's been sort of treated now, with the government saying we're not going to pay you a dime of compensation, this is classic. The same thing's happening with Romeo Fillion back east. Rajon Hintz from Quebec. The government kind of wears you out. You get out of jail after all those years, and you have to fight like a dog to get any compensation at all. In many states in the United States, there's mandatory compensation levels for people who have been found to have been wrongly convicted.
Yeah.
We have nothing like that here.
Yeah. How did you get interested in all of this? Because you're not a criminal lawyer yourself.
No, I am. But I've been interested in inmates for quite a long time, and the reason I got interested in inmates was I had a primal fear of jails when I was a little girl. And just because I'd driven by one once, and you know, the fortress-like setting kind of freaked me out, and I couldn't imagine being locked up for a day, let alone longer. So I decided I was going to write a novel that would help me conquer that fear, which it did. And so I was working for 3 years on a novel, which I haven't finished yet. And then I saw Ivan on TV, and during that 3 years, as part of my research, I met a lot of inmates. I taught creative writing at Matsqui Institution and so on. When I saw Ivan on TV the day he was acquitted in October 2010, I vowed to meet him because I'd never met a sex offender, and I was curious as to how someone could endure, actually survive, 27 years in jail as a serial rapist. And so I just wanted to hear his story about life in prison. And then when I met him, he said, I want someone to tell the story of how I'm innocent. And at the time, I wasn't really even aware of the difference between acquittal and being innocent. But that was all he cares about, is that he be declared innocent in the court of public opinion.
And aren't sex offenders, aren't rapists when they're in jail? Don't they have a rougher time of it? And how did he sort of survive that?
They're the bottom of the barrel. I guess the pedophiles are one step down. But any kind of offense, sexual offense against a woman, is viewed way worse than being a serial murderer. Anyway, he was fortunate enough, he'd met a friend when he was in Stony Creek Prison when he was about 18, and this fellow had become, in the intervening years, a serial killer. So when they reconnected in Prince Albert Penitentiary in Saskatchewan, the two of them were in the same prison together, and his pal said, "I'm going to put out the word that if anyone messes with Ivan Henry, they've got me to deal with." Hmm. And that shut it down. So that didn't stop the psychological harassment, of course, and the verbal harassment, but it certainly stopped the sexual violence.
Yeah. Right off the bat, when we read the book, we get a sense of Ivan Henry and who he is.
Yeah.
It's not altogether a sympathetic, he's not a sympathetic figure, I should say. I mean, he's a rather difficult and rude even. In terms of getting to know him, what's your sense of who he is and what he's like?
Well, first of all, let me say that former Supreme Court of Canada Justice Ian Binney wrote an endorsement for the book. Mm-hmm. And what he said is, our prison system is filled with difficult people such as Ivan Henry, people who are, you know, irascible, ill-informed, etc. But that doesn't mean they get to be abused by the system. And he said that the treatment of Ivan Henry was horrific and beyond excuse. Ivan is a complicated person. And, you know, I've met with him hundreds of hours. I have a very good relationship with him, although it is up and down. I think finally he trusts me, but it's taken 4 years. You know, and I don't know how much of that was pre-existing. It's impossible to know what his personality was like. He can be very charming. He's very funny. And in many ways, he has handled this ordeal with great resilience.
Yeah, that's a sense that you certainly get when you see him on television even now.
Yeah.
So what happened last week in terms of, because that made the news, he was in front of the Supreme Court, was he?
Yes.
Or his case was?
He went to the Supreme Court of Canada to argue that when you sue the Crown, you should be able to argue not just that they maliciously prosecuted you, which is a very high bar, very hard to prove malice, but that you should also be able to sue the Crown for negligence. It's a fascinating issue. If everyone, you know, the whole wrongful conviction community around the world is looking at it, mm-hmm. because if we can open up that new, broader ground, then we can hold the Crown more accountable for things that they have done wrong. Everyone was quite surprised, I think, he got leave to appeal. But, you know, when the Supreme Court of Canada doesn't grant leave to appeal every day. So that is a very positive sign. I don't know how long it'll take them to reach a decision. What I say, though, is that we've already got malicious prosecution. It's great if they expand the grounds, but in the particular case of Ivan Henry, there is malicious prosecution proven in spades.
And there's a civil trial next year, is that right?
But it keeps getting put off. Yeah. They started the lawsuit. Ivan started the lawsuit in 2011. It was supposed to be heard this year. Now it's been put off to 2015. You just don't know. It could be 2016. I mean, it's on the never-never plan.
Yeah, and so he's suing the City of Vancouver through them, the Vancouver Police Department, is that right?
His main lawsuit is against the Crown, which is the province.
Okay.
So it's malicious prosecution, so that is against the Crown. I'm hoping that my book will put pressure on the government to settle the case.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's an extreme hope on my part, but it absolutely is my hope that, A, my book establishes his actual innocence, and, B, it makes the case for malicious prosecution.
Now, I guess you can't sue the police in things like this, or can you?
Well, he's suing them as well. So he's suing the City of Vancouver, he's suing the VPD, he's suing the provincial government and federal government.
So, as you alluded to earlier, we get the sense that in 1982 the police department wanted to get someone because there were all these crimes going on.
I just wonder why they didn't get the right guy.
Yeah, and
that's the mystery.
Mm-hmm. And so, did you talk to anyone who was part of the investigation, say who worked for the police department about this in the course of writing this book?
Well, of course, I tried to talk to many people, but anyone that is being sued didn't want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
I tried talking to the chief of police, the current chief of police, and the chief of police at the time. Neither one of them would speak to me. But I was lucky enough, through friends of friends of friends, to speak to three retired VPD members off the record, completely off the record. So in the book, I mean, I made great use of what they told me. It was quite amazing how open they were with me. But I disguised, you know, their position, mm-hmm. What role they played, everything. But they told me a lot. One of them told me about the Fink Fund, which is a fund they had at the time where they'd pay someone $1,000 and get information. In this case, it was Ivan Henry's wife, who was a drug addict. So we now know that they paid her $1,000, which no doubt went to feed her drug habit, and she told lies about Ivan. And that was what led to his arrest. Yet when it came time for the trial, she wasn't called as a witness. That is also very suspicious. You always have to call your informant to say here's the basis we had for charging him with these offenses.
And she recanted that on her deathbed, did she not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a couple of others talked to me about it too. One of them told me that after he was involved in the surveillance of Donald McCrae. After Ivan was in jail, they had a tail on Don McCrae for 3 or 4 months. And of course, he knew he was very smart. You know, you get wary if you're someone who's actually committing crimes, and you know when the heat is on you. So they never did catch him during that time. But this man told me they referred to him as the ripoff rapist. Now that's all very interesting because when Ivan was convicted, he was the ripoff rapist.
Right.
So, and yet, this man is the ripoff rapist.
Is that the guy that we saw on television a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Did you try to talk to him?
I've tried to locate him. If I were the woman that had been raped after Ivan went to jail, and if I read this book and realized that the police had done nothing, even the same investigators were involved, I'd have a thing or two to say to the police.
Yeah. Did you talk to any of the victims in this case?
I tried to talk to as many as I could. I hired a search company. I tracked down a few. Two called me back and said, you know, we don't want to talk to you. Ivan is guilty. You're re-victimizing us. Leave us alone. And two did talk to me, but the two that talked to me were complainants only at the preliminary hearing, not at the trial. But they were helpful, but they couldn't really say much because the reason they weren't complainants at the trial was because they couldn't identify who had come into their room in the middle of the night.
Right. You're a lawyer, so you'll forgive these questions if they're inane, but you're talking to a layman here. These civil cases that Ivan's got against, say, the city of Vancouver and the police department because they bungled the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Will they be punished in any way? Certain people, or is it just Ivan Henry will get compensation because there were mistakes made?
Yeah. First of all, his main case really is against the Crown. The police. Yes, absolutely. They concocted that lineup and so on.
The evidence went missing as well, didn't it?
The evidence went missing as well. So that is on the police, absolutely. But if, you know, the most egregious misconduct, it's hard to rate it between the judge, the police, and the Crown, but the most egregious misconduct was on the part of the Crown. Because the Crown withheld all exculpatory evidence, which means that They must have got fingerprints. They must have got footprints, hair follicles, all kinds of evidence. When you sexually assault 17 women, you don't have a single, you know, there has to be something left behind. And yet, nothing, there was no physical evidence linking Ivan to any of those crimes, which means they must have sat on evidence that would have exculpated him. They refused, the Crown said that he didn't need to see the medical reports, and the medical reports showed that sperm had been recovered from four of the women, and Ivan didn't know that, and he asked repeatedly for the medical reports that would have shown that, and the Crown kept saying, we don't have to show those because they're not part of our case. Well, they were absolutely exculpatory, because back then you could have sent them out for serology testing, and if possible, excluded Henry. I mean, it wasn't as accurate as DNA for sure, mm-hmm. But it had the potential to exclude him. They wouldn't let him take a lie detector test. I mean, all of the ways that he was trying to prove his innocence, they roadblocked. And it is unbelievable the lengths to which the Crown went to see him convicted. Yeah. They argued bad law that they would have known. The prosecutor. Michael Ashenko argued law that he would have known to be fallacious.
And he Ivan hadn't had a record here in British Columbia, is that right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
It was all in Manitoba, I guess, where he was previously?
Yeah.
You were kind enough to send an invitation to your book launch some weeks ago, and I couldn't make it. I heard it was well attended. Did Ivan go?
No, he didn't. He was told by his lawyer not to attend.
I see.
And which was really too bad, because it was a fundraiser for Ivan, and we raised $4,400 for him, but it would have been a lot more if he'd actually been there. Because, you know, Ivan has no money, and right now, if I make any money at all out of this book, I'm giving him a third of it, but you don't make much money from writing books.
What has he thought of the book?
He loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he loves it. I gave it to him to read right the very last draft. He's sort of read bits and pieces as we went. There's things he would have liked me to talk about that I didn't, mm-hmm. but overall, he likes what I said.
There's a lesson in here, in this book, Innocence on Trial, that we can learn from Ivan Henry's example, and that has to do with surviving.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you obviously learned up close, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, he was very taken by Viktor Frankl surviving the Nazi concentration camps. And when he was in jail, he asked the psychiatrist, and psychiatrists are few and far between in jails, but he asked the one psychiatrist, I think it was 1994, he'd been in there already, you know, over a dozen years, if he could engage in some kind of therapy. I forget the name of it at the moment, but logotherapy or something that was sort of, founded by Viktor Frankl and that school of thought, where when you are deprived of everything, when you have nothing, you're right down to, you know, the basic food and water, and how do you survive? Like, where do you find the will to go on living? And I think Ivan did that, you know. He is a survivor for sure. And I think he helped people in prison. He was well-respected by a certain group of inmates, and a certain group, I might add, of guards and staff. In fact, I've talked to some staff people who quite liked Ivan, and because he was, what you see is what you get. He was just telling everyone he could that he was innocent. I mean, they even called the prison library the Ivan Henry Library. Hmm. You know, it was kind of like the informal word for it, because he spent every minute he wasn't working in the library.
So the realistic scenario for you is that he gets settlement from the government.
Yeah.
In terms of his own record, I mean, is he still? He's acquitted, but that doesn't mean his record he's innocent, right?
No, he'll never get a judicial declaration that he's innocent, because our courts in Canada don't give judges the jurisdiction to make declarations of innocence. So he'll never get a formal declaration that he's innocent. But if possible, he will convince the public. I mean, there'll always be some people that won't believe it. But he wants to convince right-thinking people that he's innocent.
The other thing that I thought about in reading your book was how we, as a society, as a culture, don't think of the wrongly convicted enough. Joan, why should we?
Well, there was somebody published something a few days ago saying there might be as many as 120,000 innocent people in U.S. prisons. Now, we don't know, I don't know how many there are. That's just a supposition. Nobody knows, but it's a huge number. We don't know how many innocent people there are in our prisons. We can estimate there are a lot, because it's not just people that go through a trial and are found guilty. 95% of criminal charges are settled through plea bargains, where the Crown, again, which is holding all the cards, comes to you and says, we're going to run a really stiff trial against you, and you're going to be convicted, and you're going to face 15 years in jail, or you can plead guilty to a lesser offense and get 3 years in jail. And a lot of people take that offer. And so they're innocent. They've been convicted, but they're innocent. So we just have no clue. Our native population, we can only imagine how many of them are factually innocent but end up being convicted because they don't have money for a lawyer, they don't have the wherewithal to figure out what to do. So they just get dragged along, and there they go into jail. Yeah. So it's incredibly important that we figure out, and we don't have a way of auditing that. In fact, it's even worse if you're innocent in jail. You get treated worse than if you're guilty.
Hmm. Yeah, and I guess that's part of your own work now, is to shed light on all of this, right?
Yeah. I think that, you know, some states, again, America's quite progressive in many respects. Some states are actually talking about conducting audits within the prison population to try to figure out who's innocent and who's not. It's difficult because, of course, a lot of people say they're innocent when they're not. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that we should be walking away from. If someone goes on, like Ivan did for 27 years, saying they're innocent, somebody should have listened to him along the way. Instead, people like him get denied parole because they won't acknowledge guilt. So if I'm guilty, I get out of jail faster than if I'm innocent. Mm. So I think we got to work on that. There's a lot of issues about what we should be doing to figure out who are the innocent people in jail, so preventative measures. And then once someone has been found to be wrongly convicted, we've got to take remedial measures to get them compensation sooner rather than later. And right now, the only way with malicious prosecution, what the government is saying in the case of Ivan Henry is, well, you're not factually innocent. And therefore, even if you're wrongly convicted, that's just a procedural issue because substantively, you're guilty. So we're not going to pay you any money. Well, it's very hard, absent DNA, to prove that you're factually innocent. And, of course, in Ivan's case, as you said earlier, the police lost all the semen samples.
Mm-hmm. Does Ivan think that he's making history here?
Yes, he does. His initials are I Will Make History,
I-W-M-H.
Yeah, exactly. I Will Make History. And his mom told him when he was little that that's exactly what he would end up doing. I'm sure she didn't envisage it would be this way. but I think he's quite proud of that, I think. At least it's some kind of legacy.
This is a great read, and this is your first book. Are you continuing to write? Because you're pretty good at it.
Well, thank you. I certainly hope so. I mean, I'm still busy with the marketing of this book. Mm-hmm. I had no idea there were so many loose ends to kind of deal with. I'm looking for another project. I have no idea what it will be. And, writing is my passion, and I guess social justice is my passion, so hopefully the two will again connect, and I don't know what that will look like. I'd love to find a story that, an exciting story, and because I found that I'm quite good as an investigative reporter. Maybe that's my second life or something, but I love digging around. I think if I'd been a criminal lawyer, I wouldn't have written this book, mm-hmm. because I think I would have been too beholden to my colleagues.
Yeah.
But as an outsider, it has worked very well.
Well, Joan, congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it. It's a hell of a read, and it's given us, certainly, who've read it, something to think about in terms of where we're headed and where our justice system is headed.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the interview.
You're very welcome. The website for more, joanmcewen.com. The book is called Innocence on Trial, The Framing of Ivan Henry. It's published by Heritage House. Its author, Joan McEwen, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.